Welcome to Backyard Oasis, a podcast designed by and for older adults living in the beautiful Pioneer Valley of Western Massachusetts and produced in the tech studios at Greenfield Community College in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Backyard Oasis reaches out to older adults who seek knowledge to help them live more thoughtfully, healthily, and happily, who hope to inspire others with their ideas, and who serve their communities in the interest of the greater good. We hope you join us frequently in our pleasant backyard oasis for wide-ranging conversations with a diversity of people who are growing older and want to talk about it.
Hi, I'm Denise Schwartz, your host. Christine Copeland is interested in enchantment. Inspired by daily walks in the woods here in Western Massachusetts, she creates books that show children and adults the wonder found in nature. Wonder in the astonishing body and call of the pileated woodpecker, in the diligent care of a parent bird for her nestlings, and in the often unseen activities of animal friends in the cool shadows of the forest on a hot summer day. She's interested in young readers becoming enchanted by nature. Christine is an author and illustrator, and she also paints in oils. She has a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree from Cornell University and a Master's in Education from Antioch, New England. She combines her love for painting with her love for young children and nature-based education. Her series of books for young naturalists illustrates the changing forest during the four seasons of the year in gentle watercolors that resonate with readers of all ages. She's going to talk with us today about why she cares to open the doors to the magic of nature for young readers and how the richness of the natural world influences her art. Oh, and also, she's going to tell us why she feels it is important to immerse oneself in creativity of any kind, especially as we find ourselves in the group we love to call older adults. Hello, Christine.
Hi, Denise.
You know, I was going to say, I wish we could show listeners your children's books, but then you brought them here, and it's wonderful because I can look at them, and I can remember how I felt when I first saw them. The illustrations are like daydreams for me. And what comes to mind is that watercolor of a white rabbit resting on snow in the book that you called Winter in your series about the four seasons. When I saw that, it reminded me of walking into the forest beyond our house in Pennsylvania one winter day. I was about 10 years old, and I found what I think of now as a room in the woods. I was knee-high in snow. Birches and pines and maples and other trees formed walls around me, and I had found a place to be alone and sit in the snow and just wonder. And your illustrations have that dreamy kind of quality for me. I really loved them. So I can see how your daily walks in the woods inspired you. I can understand that. So let's talk about those walks in the woods and how place influences your art.
Well, I started as a children's book author, or my first book was actually inspired when I was living in the desert.
So a very different,
very different place. But my first child was a baby, and he was fussy in the autumn, and I would sing to him because I had learned at Antioch a lot of songs for children, and I would sing The Ghost of John.
Oh, right.
Because it was right around Halloween, and I would remember autumn in New England, and I thought, you know, that would be a really beautiful children's story. It could be a songbook. And when we came back to the area, I wrote this children's book, illustrated children's book that was based in Old Deerfield. And that was a good 20 years ago. And then I got busy once the kids were growing up, you know, and in school I returned to my work as a graphic designer and a publications professional, and I sort of put that book aside. And then when the kids were older, they said, Mom, why don't you just publish that book?
Aww.
So, yeah, that was 20 years later, and so I finally got it published. And then that led to, you know, it was so much fun to do, and it was such a bringing together of the art and the music and learning about children's elementary education, all of those things,
Sure. That
I thought, well, I just want to keep doing this. And every day I walk in the woods with my dogs, and these books, the Seasons in the Forest, the four picture books for youngest children, literally came to me as I walked in the forest. The phrases would come to me, not the whole book, but in Autumn, for example, that was the first one that I published, I would hear the geese flying south, and so the phrase, fly away, fly away, fly away, goose. There's a chill in the air, the wind's on the loose. So it was just over the course of those walks in the autumn, the book came to me, and obviously it had to be tweaked here and changed there and whatever. So I would say that probably the words came to me first, but the words were inspired by what I saw.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what did come first? Was it the words or was it the paintings?
They came together because the words were inspired by what I saw, and so then I would go back to the studio and I would paint the pictures that went with the words. So it's funny. An author once asked me, "Well, which did you do first, the pictures or the words?" And they really happened at the same time. They influenced each other,
like everything does, right? Yeah. Everything connects eventually. You know, a lot of people ask this question, and I'm going to ask it again because I do a lot of walking in nature. I'm out in the woods all the time. What is it, do you think, about being out in the woods that helps us use our imagination, which is what creativity depends on, imagination, and opens us up to so much richness? What is it about being in nature, whether a garden or woods or the seashore, what is it?
Well, I think it's many things. I think that nothing equals the magnificent diversity of nature. Even in this northern forest, which may not be as diverse as a forest further south or near the equator, but still there's so much diversity. Certainly over time there's diversity as well as the seasons change. So we're just seeing so much. When my children were small, I really prefer to take them into nature and let them look at that even as infants than in something that was man-made, because there was so much more variation in color and shape and sound and movement, the wind through leaves. I mean, my little baby boy was endlessly fascinated by the movement of leaves in the trees when he was swinging. So there's that. But the other thing is, I think that we are creative when we can sort of get out of our heads and we can get out of our thinking minds and more just our sort of a place of rest and looking. So when you're in nature, when you're walking in the woods, you're often looking outside of yourself. You're looking, you're looking either at plants or you're looking for maybe a creature, or, you hear a bird and you look up. So I think that getting out of our smaller selves opens us up to the bigger self or world, and that's where creativity really resides.
And while you're doing that, sometimes you have this opportunity to just reflect. You think about what your life is like, and I don't know why those things connect, but that's what I find for me. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes I'll walk with friends and we'll be talking, and then, I have one friend in particular, we'll be sharing what's happening in our lives, and then all of a sudden we'll say, oh, wow, look at that cloud, or, oh, listen to the bullfrog.
Yes.
And we'll stop and we'll do that, and that just adds so much more to the walk.
Yes.
The talking is wonderful, but the listening is so important.
Yes. Other authors have told me that when they're struggling with the writing process, that often they'll go for a walk in the woods because they have to walk their dog or they have to get exercise or whatever, and then suddenly the solution, or the next step or whatever will come to them.
It's sort of like putting things on the back burner. You put them back there, you go, you do something else, you get immersed in something, and then that thing that you put back there kind of resolves itself. I find that to be true while I'm driving on a road that's not busy, and also when I walk in the woods. It's a really healing place.
Yes, absolutely.
So it seems like you had a lot of different experiences professionally in your life, art, education, science, and they've all kind of come together in work that you say that you have now plunged into. Tell me about that.
Well, I was introduced to the sort of formal artistic process when I was in college. I went to school in Paris for a couple of years and loved it. But then professionally, I just couldn't swing it, being an artist, you know, in New York or whatever, and selling my art. And I think maybe it's just also not part of my personality to market.
Right.
So I had to do something else to support myself. And what came naturally was working in graphic design and in publications. I also like to write and I like to talk. And so that was really the focus of my professional career. But on the side, you know, even in publications, when I was at Hampshire, I would do a lot of the illustrations for the Hampshire reports that
we
published.
You're talking about Hampshire College?
Hampshire College, yes. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So mostly my professional career was in the academic sector, and it was either writing, publications, graphic design, online work, you know, websites, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. I did take some time in the middle of my career to go back to school to get this degree in early childhood education.
Oh, okay.
Thinking that I was going to become a teacher because I hadn't met anyone that I wanted to marry and have children with. I hadn't. So I thought, well, I'll have children in my life if I'm a teacher and teaching art. So I was going to teach art, but I did the early education, the integrated day at Antioch. Got a master's, and then I met my husband.
And we put everything on the back burner, you see, and see how that gets resolved, right?
Yeah, and we came together. We got married a little bit later in life, and he had gone back to medical school to become a pediatrician, and I had gone back to school to become a teacher. So our lives sort of aligned, and then we had kids under the wire. And so that, all of that was, you know, led towards an interest in children's literature, because we read to our children from the time they were born.
Right, sure.
And one of my favorite literature forms are children's books, because they condense so much, you know. And so after many years of reading to the children, you know, that just...
It just sort of happened.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that you live in... you have a big parcel of land on which you live, and that you're out in it all the time. Did you ever expect that you would own land that you could work in, you could walk in, and that would influence your work?
No. I absolutely did not. This was very much a part of, you know, coming together with my husband, who is a pediatrician and also a naturalist. I mean, that's a very important part of his life as well. He was taking kids out into the woods before he was a doctor. So he has greatly influenced the way I am in the woods, mm-hmm. because of how I see the woods. And the other thing that's influenced how I am in the woods is I took courses here with Teresa Jones.
At GCC, Greenfield Community College.
And Anthony Reber, and they taught me so much. I mean, I took botany with Teresa and other classes as well. So I wanted to share what I had learned, I think, in those classes and from my husband. And he's my best editor. I mean, he looks at everything that I do, and there's some funny stories where he said things like, "That's a beautiful porcupine, Christine, but it's African."
Oh, you won't see that here.
Right. So I had to change my illustrations.
What did that porcupine that I saw really look like?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Good. This is why we always have to have somebody look at our work.
Right.
Hey, you know, I'm curious. So you've talked about it a little bit, but why is it so important for you to write for children? And why do you want them to see that beautiful magic stuff in nature? Why children?
Well, I think it's children naturally see what's beautiful in nature. I think it comes to them naturally. If you take a child into nature, they have an innate, curiosity. I mean, I've seen children just squeal with delight when they've seen a little, you know, red eft crawling on the forest floor. So I think it's just a question of exposing them to something that they are naturally going to have. They have natural, don't you think that children have a natural affinity to small animals?
And oh, yeah.
Because
babies.
Yeah,
babies. Things.
Yeah.
Right.
Things that are small because they're small. And and I saw that with my own children. So
You said that you don't want to write about climate and disasters in your picture books. You said you're not even interested in what children can do about that, especially young children, because even though climate is a big problem, it's a problem that as adults we have to face. We can teach children good habits, you said, but they can learn about recycling and solar power and that kind of thing in school. You said you're interested in enchantment, and you want to introduce children to the woodpecker and all the things that you talked about. Is that enough, do you think?
The fact that the reason I'm doing this, or one of the reasons I'm doing this besides the love of it, is absolutely about children inheriting the natural world from us. And I think if children are to be stewards of the natural world and protect it, they need to love it. You know,
that's
you
right.
Protect what you
that's
love.
Right.
And in order to love it, I think children need to know it. They can't just see a green wall. You know, if they learn to recognize things in the natural world, observe, they're going to feel more attached, I think, to something that they've seen and that they can even name.
Yes, and we know that a lot of children don't get an opportunity to go out into nature anymore, and that really is bothersome for me because, you know, I was an outdoor kid.
Mm-hmm.
I was outside all the time. My mom would always say, don't just sit there in the house. Go outside, read a book, or do something outside. And so I did. So what do you think we can do for folks who just don't live in a rural area like we do where we have access to nature? What can folks who live in more urban or suburban areas do to give their children an opportunity to learn about the wonder in nature, to become enchanted? What do you think?
Well, you know, nature is everywhere. Even if you're on a tarmac-covered parking lot, you can look up and see clouds.
Right.
And birds and insects. And in the corners of the parking lot are flowers, you know. People
or
would
even
call them
weeds.
But
weeds. They are growing things.
Yeah, yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So so there is that, you know, just, you know, there are interesting birds in cities. But there are also parks. And then in any opportunity that a parent or a teacher or a child, you know, a caretaker has to take a child to a small park, is great, I think.
And we have to remember to let the children get down in the grass, get dirty.
Yeah.
Yes, there are ticks. There are other things we have to be worried about. But you have to see what a blade of grass looks like. You have to know that an insect is a beautiful little creature if you really look at it well. Sometimes they're beautiful little creatures. Sometimes they're a little strange. But I think that get down and dirty part is really important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think my husband never worries about what he sees in nature. He just is attentive to it. So he's not afraid. And the more you know about those things that maybe some people would be afraid of or fear or worry about, the more you know about their behavior or their life cycle or any of those things, the less fear there is. And I think fear is really what inhibits people's ability to solve problems there's fear.
That's a really good point. And a lot of times now parents will say, oh, don't go outside because, you know, of so many dangers.
Mm-hmm.
And that really makes it hard for children to understand that not everything outside is scary.
Right.
That a fly might not be a scary thing, or that puppy might not be scary. Or I like how you said, and did you say a newt?
A little red F.
A little red F.
Or
a
newt. Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea that nature can be fearful, well, sometimes it can. But that's how we learn what is not hard, what's not difficult for us to be around, what's not going to hurt us, right?
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, just how to deal with situations that might be a little bit, I mean, if you see a bear, you should know how to respond to a bear, you know.
Well, let me just say, one just walked through my yard last week, and I kind of didn't know what to do. Well, I actually did. I just stared in awe for a minute.
At the beauty.
And it stared back.
Yeah.
And then I backed off. We all have, mm-hmm. That's what I love
about
nature.
That's an appropriate response, though. That is an to back from the bear. Back. Be respectful of the bear. Let the bear go his way, and then you go yours.
Absolutely. Isn't it wonderful that we live someplace where nature surrounds us and we can talk about bears? I just love it. Well, we're talking about kids, but now let's focus a little bit on the benefits of being out in nature and doing creative work if you are what I think both of us are now, Christine, older adults. Now, there are so many benefits. We understand that. And, you can Google it and find out a lot of information about how creative work helps our brains stay alive and elastic and flexible. There's a study from the National Endowment for the Arts that found that older adults who participate in creative art, this is really something, listen to this, had fewer visits to the doctor, fewer falls than the study group who did not participate. They also took fewer prescription and over-the-counter drugs. Other research, the NEA said, shows that creative expression can calm our autonomic nervous systems, stabilize our heart rates and our hormone levels, and stimulate the release of endorphins. Now, the NEA research also indicated that several mental health benefits, including lower anxiety, higher life satisfaction and morale, and less depression and isolation, was something that happened when people do something creative. And that can be any kind of creative work. That could be like planting flowers in your garden, knitting, creating a good meal, any kind, not just painting, not just writing. It could be any kind of creative work. Isn't that pretty astounding?
It is amazing, and it explains why when I took my blood pressure after being in the studio for 3 hours, it was really low, and I was really happy.
Isn't that amazing?
I hadn't made that correlation, but now I have to test it a little bit more. Because, I definitely feel if you just balance out your sort of mental activity over the course of the day, and there have been books written about how when you're painting or you're doing something creative, you're in your right brain, which is a more sort of holistic part of how we see the world. Then things are more balanced, and everything that you just said makes a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense
experientially. Yeah.
And so now we're kind of winding down, and I wanted to not just end in talking about older adults and the benefits to us for doing creative work. I know you do, I do. I do feel that. I do a lot of dancing, and when I'm doing that, I'm not thinking about anything else, and I can tell that dopamine is just it's just flowing through my body, because when I'm done with one dance, it's like, yes, let's do another, and you stay up and happy for a while, so I am totally with you on encouraging older adults to do any kind of creative work when they can. But I want to know now about you and what's next for you in terms of the creative work that you do.
Well, to pick up on what you're saying, it's also when you're creating, you're learning something new. And a lot of us tend to sort of fall back into old habits. And I think part of what I'm doing is learning so much about, your art progresses. You learn how to do your art. When you're doing creative cooking, you're learning new recipes. You're just keeping active and not falling into a rut. And I think that's what keeps us engaged.
Right.
And architects, for example, are notoriously long-lived.
They are?
And artists are, yeah. I mean, I don't know how old Picasso was, but I think he was in his 90s. So I think it's just that activity is of engagement and learning and creating is just good for us.
It is good for us, and it does this thing. In the things that I was reading, it kept saying that it gives especially older adults a sense of purpose and meaning. I'm creating something, and look what I'm able to do. There's a sense of being empowered and also being competent. And the idea of being competent when you're an older adult is something that people talk about a lot. They don't really believe that we it's a part of ageism, that older adults are competent in a lot of things. I'm trying not to be political here. But so doing creative activity, it makes you feel like you're doing something that's worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And that's something that a lot of older adults find very hard to find in their lives at that point. Mm-hmm. So this is what I'm saying. We're down to the last minute here. Is there any last thing you'd like to say?
Yes, I would like to say that right now we're the stewards of the natural world, but our children will become the stewards of the natural world. So any way that we can encourage their love for this beautiful planet that we live on and all the other denizens besides people,
right,
is a good thing to do. I can write children's books, but anybody can take a walk in the woods with their child or their grandchild or their great-grandchild.
That's really a wonderful thing to think about. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm going to do after we say goodbye? I'm going to go for a walk in the woods.
Excellent.
How about you?
Me too.
Okay, maybe I'll see you there. Thanks, everybody.
This concludes today's podcast. We're always looking for new ideas, so feel free to reach out to Judy Raper, Associate Dean of Community Engagement at Greenfield Community College, at 413-775-1819 if you have an idea you'd love to share. Special thanks to the creators of Backyard Oasis, Denise Schwartz, Chad Fuller, Dennis Lee, and Christine Copeland. Have a great day.